Would you like to move to reconsider the vote which we failed to pass the last,
I would.
Here.
As long as I can have a vote explanation, I would.
Then we will oblige you.
Where'd they go? In the real world, I work in this type of decision-making process for corporations in the real world. And I believe that we can do this, a lot more efficiently the way other business models have done it. And so my heartburn here is over FTEs are going to get rolled up. They can't keep pace with technology. That's my heartburn. And so, I will courtesy today, but when we come back in January, part of the report that I'd like to see is how are these genius people who are going to work for this amount going to be able to keep pace with the technology? That's my heartburn.
Sir Atkinson, is there a mechanism in which we can at least make them limited duration and then the department can come and dance for the positions for the next legislative session to, you know, try to justify them,
well,
rather than making them
permanent?
According
to what is written here, they will be phased out at the end of this biennium. Is that correct?
No, Mr. Chair, Senator Atkins, they're proposing that these be permanent positions and roll them up as into the next biennium as full-time permanent positions. If you request that they be limited duration, they would be required to come back in a policy option package to make them permanent and explain those positions a second time.
So moved. Well, sir, let's do the things here. Sir Atkinson, move to reconsider the vote for which we failed to pass.
That's
the recommendation to the emergency board. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We're now back before us.
Now before us, I would make a motion that we make these new positions
limited duration.
Senator Atkinson moves that we recommend the emergency board approve an increase in other funds expenditure limitation of $2,053,881 in the establishment of 5 permanent positions and direct the department to include a detailed list of base budget technology projects in its 2003-05 budget document for review and approval by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
You wanted to change this limited duration.
In the establishment of 5 limited duration positions and direct the department to include a detailed list. And also recommend unscheduling $750,000 of the
internet
project pending a report in January to JLAN CT committee. Is there any objection?
Okay.
Representative Worth?
Question on
that. Representative Worth, are you objecting or you have a
question? Yes, go ahead. Finish.
Representative Worth? Or Hanson, sorry.
Well, I'd like to hear from staff what the implications of the difference between the limited and permanent positions, whether that have an impact on hiring and on being able to develop a consistent work plan for the.
Well, please reintroduce yourself for the record.
Lorna Young is manager of the DMV. Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, it is always more difficult to hire for limited duration than permanent positions. And the state has experienced problems in hiring in general for IT professionals. And I understand the concerns of Senator Atkinson. We're trying to balance between having resources available and having the best resources available, and it is not always possible to have the most talented staff or be able to afford consultants. We're looking at sort of a continuation of the. But in general, limited duration positions are more difficult to fill.
If I could follow up in terms of in the last 2 months on any IT positions, have you seen an increase in the number of applicants applying for them?
Mr. Chair, we haven't had IT positions open most recently, but perhaps
maybe we could DAS or someone to come in. Dave, you want to introduce yourself?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Dave White, Chief Information Officer for ODOT. We have been hiring some permanent IT positions, and yes, we have seen some increase in the applicants, but we have not, at least our department has not tried to hire any limited duration.
And in your experience in state government, when was the last time that a limited duration position was eliminated and you had to walk out and stand and see a good person leave that you couldn't find a permanent position for? I'm just curious.
Mr. Chair, this last session we eliminated several limited duration positions and people also left.
And you couldn't?
We did not have other positions.
And so the projects stopped?
The projects that they had been working on were completed. They were brought in.
So the project is done?
Or those projects
are
done.
But an ongoing project that you had started with the limited duration? You were ended a project? I'm trying to understand here because from where I sit, you know, we've never eliminated a limited duration position for any ongoing project that I've ever seen in my limited lifespan in the legislature. So I just think it's...
Mr. Chair, in the Department of Transportation, they actually had a strategy for reducing their consultant contractors to permanent positions. And so if they had limited duration positions and people that they, the skills that they wanted to keep, they most likely rehired them in those permanent positions. And I'd also add, Representative Hansen, that there, that at this point that we are in the Oregon economy with unemployment rates as high as they are, especially in the technology field, the DMV should not have difficulty hiring people with technology skills. That's just my opinion, but timing is everything.
Representative Butler?
Mr. Chair, I think what you're trying to say is that it's difficult to continue on with any kind of a project or to terminate a project which should have an expected lifespan of something under 3 years. Difficult to terminate that program if you've got permanent employees, and I feel that one of the things that you're aiming towards is the issue of some of the and Senator Atkinson has brought this out, some of the business architecture, some of the other kinds of project coordination, and some of the internet services don't have or should not have indefinite and perpetual lifespans. They should be picked up, operated, and then changed in such a fashion that new blood probably should be invested in those particular projects. So I would be supportive of the concept of the limited duration positions, number one, because of my concern over the long-term nature of what should be limited duration or changing position titles to the job descriptions themselves. And because of the economy in which we're presently expected to live, I just hesitate to have these as long-term permanent employees when they could be done perhaps by limited duration and then justified in the next session.
Well, Representative Butler, I appreciate that. I think it's wonderful that they're moving towards and getting these business analysts. I think, you know, I just don't think it's going to be all things that were described. I think it's a good thing, and I don't think there's anything wrong with them coming back and saying it either worked or it didn't work. If it worked, you know, let's hire three more. You know, I think in terms of this is a test to see if this actually works. If it doesn't work, you know, and they feel that it's not working out, we need to go back to consultants because they find that they don't have a generalist that has the right expertise, or they don't have enough projects in which to keep this person busy. You know, that would give an opportunity for review, and I don't see any problem with keeping good qualified people going forward. I was just attempting to accommodate a member, since he's generously letting us go forward with this thing. So I was, you know,
well,
representative Worth, go ahead.
So, Mr. Chair, can I state my objections? This is my thoughts that certainly the limited duration designation, when we apply these positions are going to decrease the likelihood of ODOT to retain and recruit the highest quality individual and to perform this job. And if I think that this is just lending this inability to hire the individual qualified to perform these duties of this job just provides basically more support and compels ODOT to adopt the strategy of outsourcing this position instead of going with their original intent of hiring this position in-house. So.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, if I could have an opportunity for vote explanation before I vote, too. My personal preference would be to see this as a permanent position. On the other hand, I can understand the math of this committee at this particular point, and to move the project forward, I think I'll be willing to support the amendment.
Thank you. Okay. So, is there any objection to the motion that has been stated? Hearing, seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Health Licensing Office. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, what we're looking at here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Health Licensing Office is before you today. With a similar request as to the one they had when they appeared before you in September. At that point, you had asked for them to return. You deferred action on this item. You asked them to return once more detailed information was available. This is a request to replace the information systems, particularly the licensing systems that the Health Licensing Office has. To migrate the data system from the Department of Human Services to a system controlled by DAS, to upgrade their website and to provide staff training for the MS Microsoft Office 2000 software application. That additional detail they have developed that and they have provided that to you and are here today to explain that request.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, and Representative Hill, members of the committee. My name is Susan Wilson. I am the director for the Health Licensing Office, and joining me today is Dale Blanchard, who is the assistant specialist for the Health Licensing Office. I think where we fell short last time we visited the committee was making sure that the committee focused on this being unrelated to e-commerce and e-government. This is a migration that we need to complete in order to make the transition out of the Department of Human Resources into our own system managed by the Department of Administrative Services, IRMD. So let me tell you a little bit why we came back to the committee. During the 2001-2003 Governor's Recommended Budget process, we had a policy package and plan. And within our policy package, the legislature deferred taking action on that plan, which contained this component, to wait for the pending establishment of e-government policies from Department of Administrative Services. We were directed to then return to the September 2001 JLCIMT committee, and we did that. During that appearance, I think we left the committee with some questions. And we did provide you with the Department of Administrative Services project review and analysis. And I also attempted in an October 11th correspondence to each committee member to answer some of the questions that we didn't answer during our testimony. The Health Licensing Office was established during the 1999 legislature, and primarily to provide oversight and uniform licensing, examination, and regulatory services for professional licensing boards. The Health Licensing Office is a very small agency. We have 27 employees. We do not have currently enough staff to manage or maintain our own Sybase database system. Well, prior to the 1999 session and change of all the administrative and business services, which were housed in the Department of Human Services. After that law change, we moved those business processes relating to licensing, examination, and regulatory functions from the Health Division, which is in the Department of Human Services, to the Health Licensing Office under the jurisdiction of the director. Our goal in this process is to have a plan that allows us to manage our business operations and services adequately within our office. The request is for $140,000. $100,000 of that is for database management systems upgrade. $30,000 is for website improvement, and $10,000 of the $140,000 is for MS Office 2000 application training. Currently, we provide on our website safety alerts, safety tips, and our website and email links for staff have been completed. I did provide the Health Licensing Office project status report, which walks the committee through the things we have completed and the things that are still pending in our plan. Department of Administrative Services has determined the requirements of our system. They've given us a cost time estimate for building the new system, and this will improve our cashiering and report functions, our SFMS reporting. We will be able to track multiple license holders. We will have better documentation of our system, and it allows for future flexibility that we haven't had in the past. We've had to build systems as we get licensing programs sent to us by the legislative process. The project will contribute to our overall business plan, which is critical to our agency's operations. And we do expect, and I think Representative Hill asked us this question, to return to the committee and present more detailed planning as it relates to any of the Department of Administrative Services planning. Are there any questions? I'd be happy to answer those.
Any questions? Representative Worth?
Remind me again how many employees we are spending $10,000 on to train in the MS office.
We have 27 employees in the Health Licensing Office. Would you like to...
Representative Worth?
And I think I asked this before, but this is... So this $10,000, it's going to take $10,000 to provide this training, and you're going to hire and do this off-site.
We're actually, Representative Hill, Representative Worth, we're actually going to use as much training as possible through the Department of Administrative Services. They're assisting us in the training process, so we will utilize any services that are internal. So this is the estimate, yes, Deb.
For the STEPS program.
Okay. Try explaining.
Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just one question, and this I wanted to make certain this is for access. The website will be for access for the members of the health licensing professions, or will public access also be available, and will information be available there for the public to make some sort of an informed or educated decision on health licensing professionals in the state of Oregon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, yes, that's our overall goal, to arrive at that point where we have some interaction capabilities with the public.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Atkinson?
A question either to you or to staff. Who hosts this website? Is your website under Department of Administrative Services, or are you all on your own?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Geronimo Tagetak, DASIRE, MD. Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson. DASIRE, MD's General Government Data Center hosts the agency's website this month.
Another question. Do you have an interoffice agreement where you have to pay for that hosting services?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, yes, the agency pays for those services. There are fees associated with that.
How many hits are you getting a month? That's another related question.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, I couldn't give you that information off the top of my head. I can get that information, I'm sure, though.
One more, Chairman. Bill, how many people are using, or do you have right now this, some eyes? What services are offered at remote locations? right now? You say you're going to move to licensing exams. I mean, is there anything right now that's out at a remote location that's offered on the web?
Representative Hill, yes, Senator Atkinson. Information as it relates to licensing, they can download forms, they can file a complaint, they can read minutes, they can look at laws, rules, consumer alerts.
Nothing
alert.
Collaborative.
They can, no. That's where we're headed.
Any further discussion? The LFO recommendation is to approve the request. Is there so moved? Is there any objection to approving the request to recommend an emergency board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $140,000 to implement information systems projects and support? That objection? Thank you. Board of Pharmacy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the governor's recommended budget for the Board of Pharmacy, there was a policy option package to provide upgrades to the board's computer system, again, licensing database primarily. At that time, an analysis was underway by DAS IRMD, but was not completed. So the subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means Committee did not approve that package with the understanding that the analysis would be completed. Once that analysis was completed, then the board would come back or would come to the JLCIMT and also to the emergency board with the request for increased other funds limitation depending for an amount dependent upon the results of that analysis. That analysis has now been completed. You have a copy of that before you, and the board has come back and recommended or requested an expenditure limitation increase of $270,000 to fund this computer and information systems upgrade. And the Board of Pharmacy is here along with DAS IRMD to explain the request further.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Schnabel. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Board of Pharmacy. I've just provided you a copy of my comments this morning, and your committee staff just told you most of it. The material you have is information that was summarized in bullet form from the Board of Pharmacy's business plan and the 0103 legislatively adopted budget, neither of which I think you have copies of. Also, some information summarized from the recommendations from Human Resources, DAS Human Resources, and DAS IRMD, which I think you do have copies of in your packet. Mr. Chair, I would propose, rather than going on a soliloquy of my own, I would defer to the material you have and be available for any questions.
Have you been with the initiative in terms of biohealth licensing? Does this fit in with that initiative, or are you striking out on your own?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are not part of the Health Licensing Office, Board of Pharmacies, independent board in the Portland office building.
I understand that. My question is, are you working with them, since I'm just, the information is very similar in terms of, you know, the licensing compliance and renewal system, which I understand that they are working on. I'm just curious if you have said to them, gee, you know, we've got $158,000 thrown to the mix. You know, maybe if we all collectively to do it, that $158,000 becomes $75,000, and you can achieve the same tasks. Have you had any of those conversations?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we're located in Portland and there in Salem. We've been working more closely with the Board of Nursing that has that kind of information. But the evaluations that IRMD has done have taken into account both of the projects.
I live in Hillsboro. I'm here in Salem today. I will return to Hillsborough to sleep tonight. So I'm just, what does that have to do with, are you working with them and having a discussion with the health licensing in terms of, and working with them and see if you can reduce your costs by joining their licensing initiative?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, could I have the DAS IRMD person talk to you about what they've done with the health licensing? I personally have not had those conversations, but I would...
So the answer to the question is no, you have not had any conversations with them, but you have spoken with the Board of Nursing, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Is there any synergy with the Board of Nursing, or do they have any initiatives going forward in licensing?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't know if they have anything going forward now. We have several shared services with them. We do have a interagency agreement that shares information, resources, staff to maintain network maintenance. And
okay. Sean?
Yes. Co-Chair Hill, members of the committee. In regard to the three different systems that exist.
You introduce yourself.
Yes. For the record, my name is Sean McSpaden. I work for DAS, for the Information Resources Management Division. I'm the analyst for the Board of Pharmacy and also the analyst for the Board of Nursing. The presentation you just heard from the Health Licensing Office involves a system that is currently in existence being hosted at the Department of Human Services. Although the system request is termed a replacement, I view that more as an upgrade, as a migration from an existing relational database system, which is currently Sybase and PowerBuilder, over to a Microsoft SQL Server solution that would be hosted on the DAS platform. The current system that the Board of Pharmacy has is a Paradox DOS system. It is not a relational database system and needs to be completely replaced. The Board of Nursing system that is currently in use is an off-the-shelf system that has been customized. It is the License 2000 system. It is currently a single agency licensed system. We have talked with the Board of Nursing in regard to the possibility of leveraging the existing equipment that is in place, the existing software license, and we've also talked with, on an informal basis, with Systems Automation, the company that is the manufacturer of License 2000. We've gotten some preliminary cost information, however, a detailed analysis of the impact conversion that might be necessary of the existing Board of Nursing system and also the overall cost of a Board of Pharmacy implementation of that system would need to take place in the near term at this point. The IRMD Systems Development Consulting has done a full evaluation of the Board of Pharmacy system. They've developed a detailed list of requirements. They've identified the costs for custom development. At this point in time, with the estimated cost of moving to an off-the-shelf system versus the custom development that has been proposed, the off-the-shelf system at this point appears to be a more expensive option. It may, in the long run, provide some synergies. However, the complications of converting the existing Board of Nursing system have yet to be determined. We're working with the Board of Pharmacy and the Board of Nursing on those issues. Stepping back, the Health Licensing Office system, the proposal on the table is for an IRMD Systems Development Consulting conversion. I have talked with the people who develop that estimate. They're well aware of the work that's ongoing with the Board of Pharmacy evaluation and proposed development. And so at this point, the two recommendations do stand alone, but an analysis has taken place as to whether or not there would be an opportunity to, have the Board of Pharmacy collaborate with the Health Licensing Office. And at this point, because of the differences
in the systems, the different stages, the life cycle of those systems, it would be not advised at this time.
Just a question,
Representative Butler,
of Mr. McSpadden. Sean, are you saying that because the one system is a little bit older than the system, either the Board of Nursing versus the Board of Pharmacy, one is older, that you're not going to try and use the better of those two systems? Is that what we're saying?
Co-Chair, Representative Butler, what we're saying is that there is the certainly both systems will be developed using the same standards. Both systems will be developed on the same database platform, Microsoft SQL. The prospect of developing a shared system at this point would the complexity of doing that makes it so that we would not advise at this point in time for a shared development to occur of those two custom developed systems. They'll be developed in line with one another, but to combine the Board of Pharmacy licensing requirements, their compliance requirements, their examination requirements with the Health Licensing Office system at this point in time would not be advised.
Those couldn't be consolidated in the same platform so that all three, the Health Licensing, the Board of Pharmacy, the Board of Nursing, could all be accessed and maintained within the same database systems where we're working with health professionals, healthcare professionals, and people that are seeking our constituents and Oregonians who are seeking healthcare all within the same database and same platform.
Co-Chair, Representative Butler, that is a distinct possibility in the future. It is because of the I guess what I'm trying to say is the condition of the Board of Pharmacy system, the age of the Board of Pharmacy system, the impact that is currently occurring on the Board of Pharmacy's staff productivity, efficiency, ability to serve their customers. They have a more immediate need to move forward to bring their system into the modern day, for lack of a better expression, at this point in time. They have different needs and requirements than do the Board of Nursing or the Health Licensing Office at this point in time. In the future, however, most likely through the e-government initiative, enterprise licensing, a single statewide licensing system, is a possibility. At this point in time, we need to migrate in that way.
Follow up, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I guess I'm having trouble building a utility line to a water line on behalf of the Board of Pharmacy, and saying this will only serve the Board of Pharmacy and no one else can hook on for an additional fee. I don't know why we just don't upsize the line big enough so that the Board of Pharmacy can share that with the Board of Nursing and the other health licensing folks while we're putting in the same trunk, if you will. And I'm sorry that I don't have a better grasp of the technical language that the high techies use.
Representative Butler, I think in terms of, it was just an honest question since, we have the Health Licensing Initiative going down to try to develop a common licensure platform. And I just wanted to know if the Board of Pharmacy had any conversation, because one would think that, a name and address field of,
exactly,
could be housed and maintained there. And, and obviously they haven't had that conversation. Senator Atkinson?
Thank you.
I got a question for you.
Certainly.
We got three agencies here, essentially: the pharmacy, nursing, and health license. It seems to me with these requests that we're in a race. We're in a race to find out who can figure out how to have a web structure that the agency and their people who use the agency, licensees, can work through efficiently. So if that's the case, and one of the three has the best technology or the best model. Will we, will the other two then marry that model? I guess I'm building on what Representative Butler said. Are we in a race to build, have one of the three licensing groups build the best web-based model for licensees to use? And if so, how long does it take the other two to build? Building that seems to me three entirely different systems.
I think you're presupposing that whoever finishes, the others will use.
Well, I guess that's my question.
Well, Chair, Senator Atkinson, the ability for the state to move forward with a central licensing application is dependent upon the funding, staffing, and capability that is built within the e-government initiative for the state. The ability for these three licensing organizations to work together, yes, is independent of that. However, they need to be at relatively the same point or the same level of capacity, functionality, and well, their systems need to be at relatively common starting point to be able to then make that next leap to combine. You've characterized it as a race. I don't see it as a race. I see that there is an existing off-the-shelf system that certainly is being used in other states for individual licensing and for overall licensing throughout a state. It is a Microsoft SQL solution. The two custom developed solution, one a what I consider as a migration or an upgrade conversion over from a Sybase system, which has a from a Sybase system over to a Microsoft SQL system. The third being a Paradox DOS system that is being moved to a SQL database platform. So they are moving in the right direction. They're moving in a consistent direction. What we have indicated through our analysis is that it may be too early to have all three or licensing across the state combined on one system. We are moving in the right direction. We're migrating in that direction, but at this point in time, it is not advised.
So, if I just heard you correctly, you're saying that DAS has come to some conclusion that a common licensure system isn't feasible?
Representative Hill, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that at this point in time, with these three boards, they have different requirements. The systems that they have are at different levels,
right.
And so the combination of the three of them at this point is not advised.
Okay. So I'm just trying to clarify here, and I'll try to speed this along for the committee's sake here. You know, Gary, you haven't had a conversation with any of these other agencies regarding in terms of how you can, if you could even work together, if there's any common thing. I understand you've got other problems that you need to fix, and that these dollars will help fix some of the core fundamental issues before you could even move towards consolidation on a licensure. Mr. Latimer, is there an opportunity that you could facilitate getting all of the health licensure people in the same room at the same time and then come back and give us a 15-minute update at some previous time in the future, unspecified, as to so that we can know that every of these agencies that are out trying to do these exact same things all understand what the path is and how we can work together so that we don't have 15 different systems that do the exact same thing for 20 different agencies?
Mr. Chair, for the record, John Latimer, Director of the Information Resources Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services. The answer is yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Is there any discussions, further questions?
I just had one further question.
Representative Butler.
Excuse me for being out for just a moment. I just wanted to make sure that as we pass on the fees for these kinds of increases in technology to our pharmacists and the pharmacies themselves of some fairly substantial increases in licensure fees, do we have pretty good acceptance and uniform acceptance through the licensed professionals?
Mr. Schnabel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I'm not sure if you have copies in your packet. I do have letters from the Oregon State Pharmacists Association and from the National Association of Chain Drug Stores. Those letters were presented to the legislature in our budget package. They do reflect that they not only accept it, but they encourage the board going ahead and getting into the 20th century. They expect that we're going to provide better services, and they want to work with us.
Thank you.
The request from Legislative Fiscal is recommend that the emergency board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $270,000 to fund a computer information management system upgrade. And Mr. Latimer has agreed that he will report back at some unspecified time in the future of a meeting of all of the health licensing boards and commissions, whether they consider themselves as such or not, to get together on a common licensure platform and report back on how they're going to achieve that and ensure us that everyone understands. And then Mr. Schnabel will contact the most obvious ones and have a conversation so he can educate himself on what others are doing, and it might actually save him some dollars.
So, Mr. Chair, is the recommendation that we accept the recommendation of $243,000 for this computer upgrade at this time, then?
Representative Butler, you are so eloquent. Yes.
I so move.
Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Oh, he must be educated. Department of Education.
Thank you, Chair Hill, members of the committee. For the record, hello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could you explain what we're looking at today?
Mr. Chair and members, the 2001 legislature directed the Department of Education through a budget note to report to the emergency board by December 2001 and then again in June 2002 on the status of its Technology Enhanced Student Assessment, or TESA, project. And in summary, TESA is an internet-based project designed to address some of the shortcomings in the current pencil and paper format in the statewide student assessment system. And although the budget note doesn't specifically direct the agency to report to JLCIMT, they're here today because of the technological aspects of the project. And they're also prepared, based on a request from this committee, to do a live demonstration of TESA.
Now, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hill, Vice Chair Butler, members of the committee. I'm Dave Fazier from the Oregon Department of Education, and with me is Wayne Neuberger, Director of Assessment at the Oregon Department of Education. We appreciate the continuing support and interest of the legislature and welcome the opportunity to present and discuss with you the status of the Technology Enhanced Student Assessment Project today, which does include, as LFO mentioned, at your request, a live internet demonstration of TESA. You're being handed a copy of the final feasibility study for the TESA completed in June 2001. That feasibility study recommended a web-based system to provide student assessment, which was approved by the 2001 Legislative Assembly and is the system architecture which we'll be reporting status on today. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll turn the presentation over to Wayne Neuberger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Wayne Neuberger, the Associate Superintendent for Assessment at the Department of Education. Let me give you just a little bit of background on this project. First of all, I think it's probably a good idea to try to understand the problem we're trying to solve here before we get into actually demonstrating it. First of all, we've identified three common problems that frankly exist in a lot of assessment programs, not only in this state, but in a lot of other areas as well. First of all, there's a tremendous amount of paper that is created in the process of giving tests. To illustrate that, if we were to test all of the legislators in Oregon with the Regan math test, this is the stack of material that would be required to do that. And it would start off by, first of all, having to put together the tests, having them printed, having them distributed. Once they got here, you'd have to have them distributed out to all the people to give the test, and there's always the return of that material and so on. All of that takes literally months to occur. To test, if we tested all the legislators on with the TESA system, this is what you would need. So we're trading this amount of material for this. These are student ID cards, basically, that are used for students to log on to the system. So this is the trade-off. And basically, we can set the test up, we can log kids on, we can do that in literally hours rather than the time that it takes to take care of producing our paper and pencil tests. So the burden that schools have and basically the system has related to trying to produce paper and pencil tests, we're trying to solve with electronic application. The second has to do with the flexibility of the system. When we give these tests, basically schools have to schedule their kids to take these tests within a relatively short period of time, usually within a couple of weeks, and several times during the year. With the online system, what we basically can do, we started the system up the 18th of October. We'll have the system up through the end of May. So we basically now have created much more flexibility within the time frame of the school year for when kids can be tested. Frankly, kids will be tested when kids are ready to be tested in many cases. The other thing is the information. When students take these tests, they go off to our contractor to be processed. About a month later, the information is accessible to the school, and usually it's in the form of paper reports. With the TESA system, basically, this capability is not in the system right now, but it will be in January because we're doing some studies right now. But basically, when the student finishes the test and hits the button for them, submit the test, within microseconds, they will get their results back. And the teacher will have access that day of all of the results of the kids who've taken their tests. So we've cut down on the timeline in which teachers can get that and students can get that information and begin to use it in a more effective way. So that's what we're trying to accomplish with this system. What we've done so far is last spring we went through what we refer to as phase one. We had 28 schools, 15 high schools, 13 elementary schools, and what we did is we tested basically high school kids and third graders, the two ends. We also test in the state fifth graders and eighth graders, which we've begun testing this fall. But we wanted to check out a couple of things. One of them was the comparability of kids sitting down taking these tests on the computer versus them taking it down, taking the test on paper and pencil. So last spring, we actually had kids take tests in both modes to take a look at the relationship between those and determine how we can make for sure that the systems, doesn't matter if the kid takes the test on paper and pencil, if they sit down and take it on a computer, we're going to get the same results about those kids. We're replicating that study this fall, and we've added fifth and eighth grade kids into that mix as well as part of the replication. In the starting in January, we will have only computer-based tests. So kids will sit down, take the test on the computer, get the results immediately following that. We have currently 109 schools online giving tests to their kids. We will increase that by another 100 in January and then another 100 in around the 1st of March. So at the end of the school year, we anticipate to have approximately 300 schools online
within two additional years, we anticipate we'll have the entire, roughly about 1,300 schools online being able to give the test.
Excuse me, Ms. Neuberger, is Oregon unique in that it has uniform testing statewide?
Mr. Chair, I guess you're the chair now, Mr. Representative Butler, but there's only one state that does not have uniform state testing. That's the state of Iowa.
Okay, and I'm interested in how this test adapts, how the computer test adapts to bilingual students where they may have other characters which may not be on the standard keyboard.
Mr. Chair, that is that capability, and right now we have in mathematics Spanish and Russian tests that can be given. That capability will be in the next phase of our assessment. So the contractor that we're working with will be putting a feature in, but we don't have it in there now, so I can't demonstrate to you how that will work.
And finally, writing and the written formats and so forth, you'd mentioned just briefly something about written examinations. Did you mean actual writing of paragraphs, sentences, and words and so forth, so spelling wasn't used, spell checks and those kinds of things?
Mr. Chair, right now the tests that we have are multiple choice, we've referred to as multiple choice tests. What we have built in as part of the system that we're testing out is the ability to use this technology to actually have students compose something and then transmit it electronically and then have somebody score it and send the results back, which would basically within a few days do what would take roughly about 2 months. But that's a capacity we're just beginning to test out.
Okay, thank you.
What I'd like to do at this point, I think if it's okay with the committee, is to have a demonstration of the way this system works. With me today is Bob Olson, who is our project director of this. Bob is on contract with the Willamette Education Service District specifically for this project to serve as a project management person to help us through the initial implementation phase of this. I wanted to point out in regards to the system that we're talking about here, it's not one that the state owns or developed. This is what we have is purchased services from a contractor, a company called Vantage Learning, that this year will be delivering 18 million tests via the internet. And so to develop these systems is a very complex, costly kind of thing, and we believe that contracting out for the service is a much better route to go than try to develop and maintain the system ourselves. It's just too rapidly a changing area for us to try to manage the actual development ourselves. So what Mr. Olson will demonstrate to you is we'll take you through the system and how it works, starting from the perspective of the teacher down to the student. And what I have is a copy of a test ID card for each one of you with your personal ID on it. If, in fact, you wanted to take some of these tests later, we could arrange for that so that you could log on and do it yourself. Alleviate any fears, this is a test that we would give to eighth graders. So.
Most legislators couldn't pass it on that.
Chair Butler, members of the committee, for the record, as Dr. Neuberg has indicated, my name is Bob Olson. I'm going to do two things and try and take about 10 minutes of your time to show you this. As Wayne has said, indicated, our greatest opportunity is also our greatest challenge. In funding this project and conceptualizing it and bringing it to bear in Oregon, we made a determined decision that we would meet Oregon schools where they were, that we would not require additional infrastructure, we would not require additional hardware or software that the state would have to provide. That puts us into the world of the internet, which many of you know better than I is changing extremely rapidly. I'm going to show you about three slides that precede part of our training. This was simply a saying I'm very fond of. Those people who are seizing today are behind. What we're trying to do is seize tomorrow, and that's clearly the direction that this project is headed. I was on a panel with people from the state of Georgia who are taking 4 years to do this development. When they are done, we will already be in our fifth or sixth iteration of improvements and modifications to the system. This is a project that's rich in partnerships. Oregon Department of Education, the legislature, biennium ago, I believe, funded 622 that provided the infrastructure that allows schools access to the Internet that we need. This project is also supported by ESD partners who provide some of the technology consulting to our eventually 1,300 Oregon school buildings. The breadth of this project is simply too great for the department to reach, and we know that the expertise in this area in individual school buildings varies dramatically. Our school partners take this on with a spirit of exploration. We've been likened into Lewis and Clark. We are first state that's made a concerted effort to bring this testing delivery to schools via the Internet, and we're very proud to have our ASP contractor as a participating partner in this. This is one that I just like, and one that's been alluded to. Senator Atkinson alluded to this in a comment earlier with another panel here. People just don't opt for slower, they opt for faster, and that's what we're doing. This one is my favorite one, and one that really drives our project. Bill Gates says every product he makes will be obsolete in 3 years. The question is whether or not he makes it obsolete or somebody else does. We plan to obsolete the system as quickly as we can, as continuously as we can, and as aggressively as we can, so that we continue to provide the kind of functionality that Chair Butler referred to a moment ago, meeting the needs of our multilingual students, our bilingual students, our English language learners, students that are special needs and need larger text or audio delivery. The technology provides us, affords us all of those opportunities as we learn to exploit them. With that, I'm going to take you to TESA, and I'm going to do it just about the same way that one would do this in a school. One of the things that, of course, is a concern, and I apologize, my eyeballs aren't good enough to tell you if that's in a very good focus or not, and there's some keystoning, so you'll get to see some flavor of this. You're not supposed to read the questions anyway. They are live questions and therefore secure, so we would have to make you all sign non-disclosure agreements if you could read them from there. One of the things that is a big issue in any of our testing is security. There's a great deal of concern when we bump into the web. There's federal legislation now that requires that students' access to the web is filtered. In order to meet this response, our contractor has developed a secure browser that goes out and configures itself so that the student now can do nothing but access this site. They cannot access a spell checker. They can't go to another website. They can't do anything except turn the system on or off. We think it's a very, very important feature in the system, and we're delighted to have it. What would happen in any given day is a teacher would first log in. In order to log in, I actually have a teacher ID here. This is Jay Ball, and there is some historical Oregon significance. I confess it was eighth grade when I studied Oregon history, and Jay Ball does not mean anything to me in terms of Oregon history, except that the password is the word teach. So I suspect Jay Ball is important in Oregon's educational history, and I should probably know that, but I don't. After the teacher has signed on with his or her secure code, they have a series of choices that they can engage in. They will daily engage in some activity. They'll view a security key, but you know, one of the things I noticed when I was looking over your cards is that, unfortunately, there's one piece of information that's incorrect on one of the students. And this is what I said. There's a great deal of traffic inside the system right now because this is a refresh here. One of the things I noticed, we'll pick on Senator Metzger, he's not here. I can review the students. You can see the students' names are listed by alpha. Wake up. Thank you. I noticed that Senator Metzger's birth date is incorrect. He's listed as January 1, 1996. I don't think that's quite accurate. So I can perform administrative functions in this as a teacher or a teacher's aide, monitoring the information of the students to make sure that it's accurate. I indicate that I want to edit the student. Comes back. I'm now done. I'm going to go back to the student information page. And we now have changed Senator Metzger's birthday. You can inform him that he's now no longer eligible to engage in some activities in the state of Oregon. Go back to the main menu, and what a teacher or administrator will do every day is view a security key, view two security keys. In order to ensure that there are not random access to this, these keys are changed on a daily basis. Only people with teacher or administrator codes may look at them. They are important as we go through the testing process. And today's codes are TZGNSG6W. I've now essentially completed my responsibilities as a teacher, so I'm going to now log in and take the test as a student. I now have to provide the first of the daily keys that were just listed that the teacher looked up. I also have to indicate my TESA ID number. Since Senator Duncan is not here, given his educational experience, we'll pick on him. And I will sign in. This shows that, in fact, I am Vern Duncan. I have a TESA ID number. I also have that generous birth date. Now I will enter the second daily test key. This process is all managed by teachers or those people proctoring students in the lab or wherever the computers are. This is not an activity that is engaged individually by a student without adult proper supervision, the same way that we would proctor students taking a test currently with paper and pencil. I enter the second of the keys. And we find out that Senator Duncan has two tests available to him. I apologize. That is the clearest I can get that. He has available a benchmark 3 math test, for these purposes named LARCH. He has available to him a benchmark 3 reading test, for these purposes labeled MAPLE. We're going to engage the math test, show you a little bit of what's there. Now, this little box pops up to say, OK, click OK to start the test. Now, Mr. Olson, why couldn't we just click the start and start the test? Because we found that students double-click, particularly students who are Macintosh-trained. It was a surprise to us. It was a feature in the testing system we needed to correct. Company's gone in and added a little box to make sure that the double-click feature is not present anymore and doesn't cause us the kinds of headaches that we used to have. At this point in time, the test loads, and just quickly a tour around the screen. The reference, the graph or whatever, generally appears in this portion of the screen. The stem of the item here, the response options here. There are 11 different layout styles that we use, and we're looking to consolidate them. We believe students need to have some sense of consistency when they're viewing the items. I can now select an answer after careful study of the question and move on to question number 2. I do that simply by clicking the second one. And the second question presents itself. Again, after careful review, I mark that answer and proceed to question 3. You'll notice in the bottom line here, the color of the item numbers has changed. I've gone past number 1, past number 2. Number 3 is bold and underlined. It's the item that I'm on. Son of a gun, this problem presents me with a challenge. I need to understand some formula. The state of Oregon provides formula references for students to deal with volume of cubes. This reference is available here the same way that it is in paper and pencil on a simple drop down. I can have all those circle formulas, all those ones for spheres, or spheres are over here, that a boy, volume and so forth. I decide I've picked out the formula that I want, and this is the answer I want to have, so I'm going to continue on to number 4. I decide as number 4 loads, I look at that, and I think that AC is not the radius. You know, I make a mistake, and I decide I don't want to do number 5. I happen to click number 6. Notice that number 5 has not changed. This will be important in just a second in the feature that I'll show you. I say, well, you know, I don't really like that one either. I'm going to go on to actually number 8. Students will not always go through this lockstep. This is a multiplication thing. I have available to me a calculator that will let me do the multiplication. I have no idea if those are the numbers I want. I can read my answer. close that, go down here, compare the answer I like the best, and continue on. At this point, I look at this, and I look down, and I say, you know, I skipped question number 7. I can return to question number 7 at any time, read the item, and provide the answer. After I've gone through this, I can move. I'm not going to do all the items in the test. Once I've reached the last item in the test, item 25, I can indicate an answer here, and I can say I'm finished. At this point in the test, a very important feature pops up. Reminds the student here, I'll read to you, you didn't answer questions 5, 6, 9, et cetera, et cetera. There's a whole bunch of them I didn't answer. Click cancel to continue answering questions. Click OK to finish. If you click OK, you will not be able to return and answer any questions. This is the student's final warning that this is the end of the test. I decide, you know, I'm not going to stop there. But I do want to time out. I need to go to the restroom. I need to do whatever it is I need to go do. The teacher comes over, and the teacher says, all right, you can take a supervised break. I can enter a password for you, and you're now out of the test. If for any reason power should go down or we should lose connectivity, when I log back on as that student, that test will appear at the same place I was when we disengaged. I want to very briefly show you one, go back in and do one thing here to show you the reading items, because they vary just slightly. From the math presentation. Again, every time I log in, I have to go through this. We don't want students unsupervised to be able to go from one test to another. So I'm going to go to the reading test, and it says resume because I was already in here and started this. Oregon prides itself on reading items that are authentic. They are not reading two sentences, but reading passages. So we end up very frequently with passages that are scrolled so the students can read them, items over here that are marked, and as we move on, this passage stays in the same place that it was, while this question, as soon as it I get a node to say hi, changes, and we have a different question referring to the same passage. We go, students will go through, and in this case, answer 6 questions. You may not be able to see it. The color of these first 6 items down here is different from number 7 on. That signals the student that these first 6 questions are all going to be related to this first passage. Those are the highlights of the TESA system in operation today, excitement about the future and where we will be able to take this, as I suggested, to meet the needs of special needs students and expand this to the rest of the schools in the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
With that, Mr. Chair, that concludes our presentation. We'll certainly be available for any questions.
Any questions, Representative Hanson? Go ahead.
When you were doing the test with the kids that were taking both forms of the test, the paper and the computer, were there any differences in the results? Did kids do better with one or the other?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, we found that where we found some differences was in the area of reading. That the items were tended to be more difficult on the computer when kids read them than they were on paper and pencil. There was a slight difference in math, but nothing very significant. It seemed to be, and the younger kids, it tended to be more difficult for them than it was the older kids, which is why we're replicating the study again this fall to verify that. And basically what that means is that for every single one of these items, we will basically have what we refer to as calibrations, determining the difficulty of the item. We'll have a paper and pencil difficulty, and we'll have a computer difficulty so that we can equate the two.
Representative Ward?
Mr. Chair, I actually have a number of questions. According to this report, it says during the 2001-2 school year, a total of 300 schools have the capacity to utilize the web-based testing, and that these 300 schools represent about 25% of our schools. And then the projection is by the year 2003-04, all schools will have the TESA system available to them. Now, that is not necessary to mean that they will have the capability of taking advantage of this system that we've made available to them. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wirth, actually, they will have the capacity to take the test. One of the things we're looking at right now is whether or not they can, all of their students will be able to actually get on the computer and take the test. There's several issues related to that. Probably the biggest is logistics. When you take and it tends to be more at the, for example, the high school level. When you have, for example, 500 high school sophomores that need to take, say, three tests, that's 1,500 tests that they would have to take on this. And the issue there is one of whether or not the high school can actually manage that. That's one of the things we're looking at. We have some fairly large high schools that this year will be attempting to test all their kids in reading and mathematics. So we're anxious to see how they pull that off. If they're able to handle it, it depends upon, obviously, the equipment within the schools and so on, since we're not providing the equipment. But we think if these high schools that are on this year can handle it, then probably most of the ones in the state can. But we're leaving open the option that if a school can't handle testing all their kids via the web, that we will have a paper and pencil backup for those kids or those schools.
And so what you just said was the not all the school districts will have the technology necessary to avail themselves of this system, and that these upgrades, if they're needed, will be the responsibility of the school districts. So if the projection is that this system will help students perform better on these assessment tests, aren't we, in fact, by not providing these upgrades to all school districts, therefore discriminating against some of them in their ability to comply with state mandates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, they can, this is not a mandate, and this is an option.
State assessments are a mandate.
Right, but we have two options. We have this option, we have the paper and pencil test. The supplying of hardware, frankly, all of the schools will have internet connections or do have internet connections. So it's not an issue of having the connection. The issue is whatever the configuration is within the school itself. And frankly, right now, that is the responsibility of the local school district to take care of. It's not the state has not taken on that responsibility to make for sure that every school in the state has exactly the same computer capacity.
Go ahead, and then I have another.
So this is more of just a logistics issue at the local level in terms of how they would rotate N number of students through N number of computers. And so they could, through the entire school year, if they've got 10 computers a day, they can rotate as many students through those computers as it takes to take these tests to accomplish this task.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. That is one approach they could take to it.
So in here, when I say the department plans to increase the number of participating schools, there's no reason that every school can't participate, or is there some sort of proctoring, school that some instructor needs to go through to learn how to present the TESA test versus paper? I mean, I'm just curious in terms of why it would be limited if all it requires is a computer and an internet connection. So why can't it be rolled out to 100% of the schools, and then the school can determine in terms of whether they feel they have the ability to administer the test through the system?
Mr. Chair, let me clarify that. The system will be rolled out to all 1,300 schools. The question is whether or not the schools internally will have all of the capacity to deliver it to all of their kids. So there won't be a school that will be left out. The issue will not be on our end, it will be on the other end.
And are you looking at helping schools by you know, finding a semi-full of computers that they could set up in the gymnasium, and allow some sort of rotation through to assist. I mean, since this is an issue in terms of that they may not physically have enough infrastructure, but you could, you know, show up with, you know, 25 computers, put it on folding tables in the gymnasium, hook it up to an Ethernet port, and away they go. I'm just, if you thought about giving a mechanism to help administer this test in a more efficient or in a larger capacity versus, you know, a school that may only have, you know, 10 computers in the entire school.
Mr. Chair, that's why Mr. Olson on his slide indicated that one of our partners is education service districts around the state. The job of the education service districts is to work with the local districts in terms of ensuring that they have the capacity in terms of the right kind of equipment, the right kind of settings, and working with them to in terms of how best to configure things. So we're working through the education service districts since they are much closer to the districts and schools than we are at the state level, and they deal with them on a day-to-day basis. So that will be part of the role of the ESDs in working with their districts.
Dr. Neuberger, may I? I've had the privilege of being in a number of the schools as they've done the testing, and Chair Hill, precisely what you described has in fact occurred in a number of settings. North Medford High School took a vacant classroom and brought in 30 computers from different sites in the district, marshaled them in one setting so that they could go through this. A number of schools, though, have done what you earlier suggested, and that is begun to think about testing in ways that are different than what we've normally done. Normally, the state of Oregon provides an opportunity for students to take the tests, tells them when they will begin and when they must end. That is something that is rapidly being rethought, not only from the Department of Education's perspective, we're trying to provide that opportunity, but also from school districts who now see an opportunity. We have students who, at the beginning of this year, have taken and met benchmark requirements that they normally would not have available to them until the end of the year. So, as you suggest, testing is likely to become an event that stretches itself out as students become ready to take the test in their mind and the teacher's mind, as opposed to being ready to take the test when we tell them they're ready. Thank you.
I guess I think, Mr. Chair, I want to come back to the whole capacity limitation caused by the lack of computers. I mean, are we assuming, is it safe to assume that all ESDs and school districts have adequate computers, actual hardware, to, you know, necessary to take advantage of this, and all that may be needed is system upgrades or reconfiguration?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, I do not have the information to tell you about the status of every district's computer equipment. That is not something that we have. We know from talking to some of the districts that without some upgrades, they would have significant problems in being able to use the system. But to tell you how widespread that is, I think that, again, depends upon how aggressive the school district has been in upgrading computer hardware within their schools. And that is not something that is a there's no state requirement related to computer capacity within schools.
But, however, there is a state requirement, because of Measure 1, that the legislature provide necessary resources for school districts to meet the requirements or mandates that we pass on them. And these student assessments or state testing is a legislative mandate. So if we're providing this resource to allow some school districts to better comply with state mandates, but yet precluding others, I mean, it just seems, in my argument, then we should be required as a state to provide the necessary hardware for all school districts to comply with these state mandates and avail themselves of this technology.
Mr. Chair. For the record, Dave Fazer, Department of Education. Representative Worth, in response to your question, part of the grand design as far as implementation of this and other initiatives in the school districts included a very generous legislative appropriation of one-time funding over $200 million in 97 and 99. These requirements were specifically part of the consideration that the schools had in spending those one-time funds. So we feel fairly certain that the vast majority of school districts have the internal capacity as far as hardware, software at this point, and the connections, of course, to implement TASA within their school. There is the issue of, within the school itself, two different paradigms that have just been described. Do you put 200 computers in a gymnasium to test everyone at once, or does the school need fewer resources and assets and look at a free flow model of how student testing is accomplished, which of course takes a lot less computers. So ultimately that decision on the amount of resource requirements they have would be based upon their particular approach to using the TESA system. But we feel confident again that the resources were there for them to set themselves up with the appropriate amount of computer hardware and software to utilize the TESA system when it became available.
I'll just keep going. And that's, I guess that's assuming that they had enough money to cover all their other budget items and you know, and about their technology requirements. But I guess I'm interested in whether or not we're going to keep track as we implement this over the next couple of years of, you know, I guess assessment at our school district's ability and to comply and meet these state requirements, and whether or not school districts who can't use the system and find out why they can't use the system, and if it is, in fact, technology resources, you know, that we report that and we have at least, you know, indications that this is that this lack of computer technology is hindering their ability to meet state requirements, and that other school districts who are able to take advantage of this TESA system are better to able to comply.
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, we do, as part of our bringing on schools, we do a very extensive sort of workup with them on the equipment they have, the connectivity they've got, all of the capacity within the school to be able to use the system. So as we move through them, the schools that are coming on, we'll have very good information about the capacity there and whether or not it is or is not hindering their ability to use the system.
The implementation of a particular school, Department of Ed is responsible for providing training for those local personnel in the operation of the system, interpretation of test scores, and as Wayne just mentioned, at that time we of course would make an assessment on that capacity because we have to train them to use the capacity they have for the student load that their school has.
Representative Hanson.
Two questions. On going back to the testing that you've done with the kids using both written, and are there any, and you're saying there's not a great deal of difference between the two systems, it's relatively marginal, are there certain kids that that do dramatically different on the two testing modes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, what we've looked at in that regard are particularly the background of the students and their ability to in their experience in using computers, because that was one of the questions we asked them, is how extensively have you used computers in the past? And there's a factor related to that, but I'm not sure it's the computer itself as it is perhaps the student's background that prevents them from having access to computers. That might be an issue there, but we do find that for some kids their performance is lower, but their performance was also lower on the paper and pencil tests. So I don't think it's the computer alone that is contributing to that.
The other question that kind of relates on that testing, does the different, have you found that different types of technologies, for example, a kid taking it on a DSL system rather than a slower modem, does that change the results at all? Different uses of technology.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, actually, all the schools have T1 lines to them, so they're all through that network. Now, we have encountered issues related to response times in some areas, and that's because of some connectivity issues that we had to work through. At this point, I don't think we have any of those left. So in connecting up and getting the system operating, there's some sort of shakedown period of making sure the system works in that location. Actually, our database initiative folks had the same problem when they were using their project. So you kind of have to work through each one and solve that problem.
Representative Work?
I just have last few questions. I'm interested in how these the schools that you have used this uses pilots were selected, and then how the next group that you will test out this equipment on is how your what your selection criteria is. And then I'm also interested in if you would give us an idea of you know, the security of the information stored in your system. Was the confidentiality was pretty high, that would be protected. And I'm, you know, there's a number of reports and outputs that this system is capable of providing. So how secure is that information? How secure are we in knowing that the confidentiality will not be compromised?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, that's one of our major concerns as well related to the security and confidentiality. So, I mean, we've all of the information we send back and forth is encrypted information, and it that's one of the things we've looked at. And actually, we will be doing our own independent security audit of their system to make for sure, in fact, that it is that there won't be any compromises with their system. So, at this point, we have not. They have not encountered any security breaches, and we have not encountered any working with them. But it is, it's an ongoing concern. I mean, obviously there are pretty talented folks out there who are able to break into systems. They have, this is their primary business, internet kinds of things. So they are very skilled. That is one of the things why we don't want to take on the system. We don't want to have to be responsible for, creating the system that has to do that. We'd prefer to leave that to some people who are highly skilled at it.
Representative Butler.
Just two final items, and I wanted to make absolutely certain that the writing communication skills will not be overlooked in this process as we move to high technology. I need some assurance that that won't happen, and then I'd like to, pivoting upon what my colleagues have asked here, I just want to make sure that in no circumstance would any child be left behind because of this high technology that Jesse introduces into the classroom.
Mr. Chair and Representative Butler, in June we can bring back some information related to the writing and math problem solving to show you how that's being dealt with. The other issue, I think, is basically the way our system works here in financing schools is you folks allocate to them the funds, and they determine how those funds need to be spent within their district, with a few exceptions of targeted kinds of things. We do not have control over how they choose to fund that, how they choose to equip their schools and so on.
My question, Mr. Newberger, isn't about the school. It's about the youngster, those youngsters who may come from homes where they don't have the access to the high tech, and they're introduced to that only in the classroom situation where they might have sharing that particular piece of technology with another 25 youngsters in a classroom. You might have 2 hours a week where other youngsters will be running home, and maybe 15 students out of that 25 or 26 students will have immediate access, unlimited access to their own computers. And that's the nature of my concern, that no child would be left behind as a result of a high-tech introduction of the test into the classroom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, I would think that this project, in fact, would encourage more use of computers with all kids rather than less, because if in fact this becomes a standard way for kids to be tested, and we're not discriminating across any type of schools in terms of using the system. So we have schools that have basically a very high percentage of limited English proficient students, for example, who are taking these tests on the computer. So I think it would encourage, in fact, the access to computers by kids in those environments rather than, in fact, because it gives another application, another use for why kids need to have the background experience in using computers.
Interesting to see how it sorts out.
Any further questions?
I just noticed something in regards to the confidentiality of the information. You also, there's identification of participation in a number of special programs, including special education. So that information is in this in the system. So the privacy requirements or privacy protections regarding that are very strict and definitely laid out on the federal level. So, you know, the need for confidentiality is certainly high with this information. And, you know, no system is foolproof, certainly, but you're safe in your belief that the system is providing the need of security at this level, providing this level of privacy. And what's a ballpark figure? What's the amount of information we have that we're protecting, providing security for in the system?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, let me first say that we are very sensitive to that issue as well, because we deal with a lot of data about a lot of kids, and it's something that we take very seriously. In terms of the information we have about kids, basically, with our office, for example, we deal with the students that we have assessments on. And some of the information, for example, the information about whether a student is in a special education program or not is voluntary. It's not required information. But we do have information about their ethnicity, for example. We would have information about any special programs that we have information from them about or from the school about, since the school enters it, not the student. And then the testing information, that's the primary things that we would have information about.
If I might here, I'm just intrigued, is why would anyone want to steal this information? You know, there's confidentiality, and then there's privacy, then there's, you know, this notion of security. You can do certain things to maintain confidentiality. You can store data in specific mechanisms and means in which to sort of not have it readily identifiable. So if someone were to get access, is it more an issue of someone not being able to alter the results versus, I don't think anyone, it's a matter of national security that, some child didn't know the answer to question 4 on, the volume of a cube.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how to respond to your question, but I think the issue here is more, it could be mischief more than anything else, and we want to make sure that we protect it against them.
So I guess I would question, when you're determining the level of security that you must provide in the system for the information provided in it, does the factor as to what's the probability that someone will want this information factor into the level of security that you actually provide?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, not to us. We consider this to be important information. So because it is personal information about a student, and there are federal laws related to the protection of that information and so on, we take that very seriously.
Very good. We will move on when Senator Atkinson returns. We'll take action on accepting the report.
Thank you for the opportunity.
I just wanted to ask Mr. Olson while he's still here, the carpe manana, which N was the N on? Was it on the
wrong one?
That's
my error.
What language is that manana?
and you are, Chairman Butler, the third person to point that out in all of the presentations. No one else has caught that. So.
Do you have any line? Okay, that's to Department of Ag.
Jim, can we take a break?
Let's take a 5-minute recess. Stand in recess.